Since the 1800s, Hickok & Boardman Insurance Group has been providing quality service and peace of mind to our clients. With our offices in Burlington, Stowe, and St. Albans, and our Dennis Ricker & Brown offices in Montpelier and Lynnonville, we are here when you need us.
And now WDEV FM and AM presents our two-hour public affairs program, Open Mic with Mike Smith. Important topics, topical guests, and your phone calls. And now here's the host of Open Mic, Mike Smith.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us this morning. It's primary day, so get out and vote. Important vote today. We'll make substantial time in today's program to talk about the primaries. If you support a particular candidate, give us a call and tell us why. This is an election that's important about the future of Vermont. So get out there and vote. We'll also speak with Travis Roy of the Travis Roy Foundation. Many of you have heard about this story. It's an inspirational story about what happens after an unexpected accident that leaves you paralyzed. We'll talk about the incident. We'll talk about what Travis Roy did after his accident. And then we'll promote this upcoming weekend's Travis Roy Foundation Wiffle Ball Tournament in Essex. And it's a great tournament. And last year they raised over $500,000 in this tournament. So let's talk about the primary. Who are you voting for and why? Will the wind debate have an influence on how you vote in the Democratic gubernatorial election, in the Democratic primary? Is gun control an important issue for you? And if so, how will you vote? In the Democratic primary, in the lieutenant governor's race, is the Bernie endorsement of David Zuckerman a factor in how you will vote? And on the Republican side, have the negative ads against Phil Scott by Bruce Lisman influenced your vote? These are some of the questions that I'd be interested in your responses to. Give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll-free at 877-291-8255. Who are you voting for in the primary and why? Do certain factors influence how you're going to vote? For example, wind or guns, or maybe even who endorses a candidate. Bernie Sanders, for example, has endorsed David Zuckerman. And do negative ads have an influence on you? You know, the Republican race is perhaps closer than what many have expected. So the negative ads must work in Vermont. But the big story of this primary season is the money that's being spent. Just think about this. In most campaigns, whether on the Democratic side or on the Republican side, you're closing in on $1 million. If you're Bruce Lisman, you're over $2 million. Plus all the PAC money that is coming in from the outside of the campaigns, this is the most expensive race for governor in history. And it's the only one that I can remember where there has been sustained use of negative ads. So what do you think? I mean, we've seen outside money pouring in, whether it's industrial wind developers for Sue Minter, high-tech exec for Matt Dunn, or former Wall Street execs for Bruce Lisman. You know, the days of the small, inexpensive campaigns in Vermont, they seem to be over. And remember, these governor elections are every 2 years. Although this is an open seat this year because Peter Shumlin obviously isn't running for governor. Just a heads up, just a programming heads up. We'll be listening to your comments, your opinions for most of the day today on the primaries. But tomorrow we'll have political analysts in that will join us and give us their opinion on the results. And we'll be moving on to other subjects on Thursday and Friday. So what is your opinion? Who are you voting for and why? And are there particular issues that have convinced you to vote in a certain way? For example, wind or gun control or an endorsement or negative ads. Give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. Who are you voting for and why? Let's go to Fred in Montpelier. Fred, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Good morning. I just want to say that the Eric Bruce Listman ad is another positive vote for Scott. I worked with Scott as a contractor. He's the most honest guy I ever saw. We used to like to have him on the job because we didn't have to have as many inspectors. The other thing I'd like to point out, all those jobs that DuBois Construction got for the state were competitive bid. They were the lowest bidder out of a number of bidders for each and every job. So there's no infraction or anything in there. It was bidding on a job, just like it was bidding on a job in New Hampshire. He's honest, and he should be the next governor. Thank you.
Thank you, Fred. Let's go to Rich in Huntington. Rich, you're on open mic on primary day.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
Here's my strategy. I'm concerned about Sue Minter being governor. I think she's dangerous for a few reasons. The main reason is she doesn't have much respect for the Second Amendment. And the fact that she's turned that into her number one issue, although she's backed off in the last week and a half, I think, after putting her finger in the air. And finally figuring it out that it's a dangerous position to take. But so I'm going to be grabbing a Democrat ballot today and voting for Matt Dunn because I don't think he has as much of a chance of beating Phil Scott as Sue Minter does. She has the magic double X chromosome advantage, and she's a media darling. I think it's imperative to keep her out.
Rich, in your assumption here, you're assuming that Phil Scott will win the primary. Are you fairly confident of that?
If I wasn't confident of that, I wouldn't be voting that way. I think Mr. Lisman has shot himself in the foot consistently over the last few weeks. I may be wrong. You know, money might speak, negative ads might speak in this case, but I'm fairly confident.
It is the understanding of many that this race has really tightened. So the Scott Lisman race. So if you move to the Democratic side and vote against Sue Minter, as you just had mentioned, do you risk having a candidate on the Republican side that you didn't want?
It's a risk. Yeah, like you said, he has moved up a bit in the last few weeks, but I think, like a lot of people have been saying consistently, the negative campaigning. I don't have a problem with factual negative campaigning, but I think he's been stretching the truth, and I think that rubs people the wrong way. I don't think he's going to be a danger of defeating Phil Scott.
Thanks, Rich, for your phone call. What we're talking about today are the primaries. Who are you voting for and why? And do certain things influence how you're going to vote? For example, the wind debate, does that factor into how you're going to vote? Does the gun control debate factor into how you're going to vote? Or, like Rich had just mentioned, negative ads, does that factor into how you're going to vote? Give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. Let's go to Lee in Northfield. Lee, you're on open mic.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I am going to be casting a ballot, though I typically would go very independent and could go either way. I am absolutely voting for Phil Scott. We have known Phil for a very long time, way before he ever entered politics. And since he's been in politics, he has continued to be honest and genuine and hardworking. And the fact that when his business sustained that horrific fire several years ago, he found ways to keep his employees employed and getting a paycheck. That speaks volumes. He does things that he just sees that need to be done without looking for a photo op and without looking for press releases to tag along behind him. And the negative ads, I would not have voted for Bruce Lisman anyway, but the negative ads just turned my stomach.
Thanks, Lee, for your phone call. Let's go to Ann in Waitsfield. Ann, you're on open mic. It's primary day, and we're talking about the candidates. Ann, are you there?
Hello?
Hi.
No, you've hit Waterbury. I'm sorry. I must have skipped Ann. I apologize.
No, that's okay. Go right ahead. And
yeah, along the lines of the negative advertising, I hate to chime in with this, but I agree with your first caller. I think that we need to beware of Sue Minter. I think that a continuation of any more of the Shumlin policies is going to just further deteriorate the situation in Vermont. And that was just my two cents and chiming in.
Well, thank you. Let's go to Dee in Duxbury. Dee, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Good morning. My husband and I just voted for Phil Scott. We believe him to be an honest, hardworking man, works for his money and his employees. And also, we're concerned about the parental rights for notification about abortion mm-hmm. for minors. That's a big issue. That's huge.
What do you think about the negative ads, Dee? Did they have an impact on you or not?
Well, an impact in what sense? I mean, I think Bruce Lisman is, it's terrible. It's not true. And, you know, if Phil Scott were, like, a wealthy man, then we'd know about that. But he's not. He's not a wealthy man. He didn't make all kinds of big bucks from his jobs. And this is a little state. I mean, you don't have a lot of choice. He, like your caller said before, he puts in bids for jobs, and he's selected. When he's selected, his company, that, by the way, he owns with his cousin, it's not just his company. But I think it's, you know, I think he came by it honestly, and I don't think Lisman is he's not the right guy at all.
Thanks, Steve, for your phone call. We're talking about the primaries today. We've opened up the phone lines. Who are you voting for and why? And do certain issues influence the reason why you're voting for a particular candidate? For example, does the wind debate have an influence on how you vote in the Democratic gubernatorial race? Is gun control an important issue for you? And if so, how will you vote? And in the Democratic primary for lieutenant governor, is Bernie Sanders' endorsement a factor when you're looking at David Zuckerman? And in the Republican race, have the negative ads against Phil Scott by Bruce Lisman influenced your vote? Give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. And as I said, no matter what happens today, this is one of the most, well, it is the most expensive race for governor ever. Millions just in the primary. If you don't have $1 million in the bank as a candidate, whether you're on the Democratic side or on the Republican side, guess what? You're not in the game. And Bruce Lisman has spent over $2 million, plus all the PAC money coming in from the outside. This is nuts in terms of what's going on. And this is just the primary. I think we got to do this all over in the general election. Outside money pouring in, whether it's industrial wind developers for Sue Minter, high-tech exec for Matt Dunn, or Wall Street execs for Bruce Lisman. This is nuts for the state of Vermont. You know, the days of the small, inexpensive campaigns, they're over. And every 2 years, we're going to be electing a governor. Now, look, I said this at the beginning of the show. Not every 2 years will we have an open seat, but it's going to be more and more expensive to run for governor in this little state. So if you have an opinion, you want to share who you're voting for and the reason why in the primary, give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. Let's go to John in Brookfield. John, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Good morning, Mike. This morning I voted for Peter Galbraith, and because of the wind issue, you asked about the wind issue, you know, he really nailed it in that it's not about being NIMBY or anything. It's about habitat, and ridgelines are our pristine habitats, and the majority of them should be protected.
Hey, John, thank you for your phone call. Wind issue was in John's thinking when he was voting for Peter Galbraith, and Peter Galbraith was on this program and was very explicit about the fact that we shouldn't allow any industrial wind development on our ridge lines here in Vermont. He basically said if Connecticut wants their power, then let them put it on their ridge lines or on their oceans in terms of what's going on. So we're asking you this morning to give us a call. Tell us who you're voting for and the reason why. And are there particular issues that have swayed your vote one way or the other or turned you off about a candidate? Give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. I'll take phone calls for a few more minutes before we move on to our first guest, which will be Travis Roy of the Travis Roy Foundation, and talking about the Wiffle Ball fundraiser in Essex at Little Fenway this weekend. One of the things that we have talked about is that this is going to be a very expensive governor's race this year. Is that good? Or is it something that we should be alarmed about as we talk about campaigns and campaigns in the future? Very interesting sort of developments happening along that line. The other thing is, you know, we can open this up a little bit to other issues as well, but let's go back to the phone lines and let's go to Don on I-89. Don, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Hi, thanks, Mike. I have a question about, do you really think that this is the end of the low-budget, you know, gubernatorial race in Vermont? Do you think that, you know, a Bruce Wisman character had really sent that high benchmark for, you know, if you're not spending half as much as me, you're not in it? And if we don't get a character like this in the future, maybe we can see this bubble maybe lowered a little bit.
Don, I do think it's a benchmark because you're looking at a primary where all the candidates are at the million, basically the million-dollar mark. You've got Matt Dunn, you've got Sue Minter. I suspect Phil Scott will be near the million-dollar mark in the primary. So it is something that is really amazing to me. And then you've got the general election. Plus, Don, you've got all the money that's flowing in from outside PACs. Enormous amounts of money that are flowing in from outside PACs. And this is just a primary. Think about this. If you're spending $1 million or more in a primary and outside PACs are still flowing in more than that, this general election could be $2 to $4 million, you know, for one candidate. This is nuts, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess for my last 2 cents, absolutely cast my vote for Phil Scott. He's the man all the way. Thank you very much, Mike, for having me.
Thank you, Don. Let's go to Elizabeth in Montpelier. Elizabeth, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Good morning. I just left the Montpelier polls, and I wanted to tell you that I voted for Bruce Lipman. He's the only one that can take this state and turn it around. We need help, and he can do it.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Let's go to Fred in Newberry. Fred, you're on open mic. Good morning.
And so with all this big money coming into the state, it looks like governorships have become national or de facto national elections.
Fred, I'm not sure, because the money that's coming into the state is a little bit more specific. For example, there is industrial wind coming into the state, money from industrial wind developers. There is money coming in from personal relationships like Matt Dunn with high tech. There are personal relationships with Bruce Lisman with Wall Street money coming in as well. So I don't know. I'm not ready to make that leap, but it certainly is a trend, I think, Fred, that you're onto here. What do you think? Whoa.
I do think it is a trend, and I think you'll see it in other states as well.
Fred, thank you for your phone call. We're talking about primary and primary day, and we're looking at we're asking you why you voted the way that you voted, and we'll continue this discussion in the second half of the program, and we'll be right back with Travis Roy and talk about the Travis Roy Foundation. This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. It's my pleasure to have on the line this morning Travis Roy of the Travis Roy Foundation. Travis, good morning.
How are you, Mike?
I am terrific on this wonderful day. Travis, for those that may not know, can you go back to that fateful night on October 1995 and tell us about the 11 seconds and what happened?
Sure. No, I was freshman 1995 at Boston University. It was October 20th, and my very first game, my very first shift, I was playing as a freshman, playing with a guy by the name of Chris Drury. He was a pretty good player. And they dropped the puck, and the puck got dumped into the offensive zone, and I skated in there just as fast as I could, probably a little too full of adrenaline, being my first game, and the excitement of playing for the defending national champions. And the opposing defenseman picked up the puck, and I thought I'd deliver a nice solid shoulder check, hip check to him. And when I went to hit him, I just didn't hit him as squarely as I'd hoped, and I lost my balance and fell headfirst into the dashboards, and unfortunately ended up breaking my fourth and fifth cervical vertebrae. And from there, it was the stretcher to the ambulance to the hospital, and trying to put my life back together. And it took some time, but I eventually figured things out, and I've been trying to make the best of my life and ever since.
What did you go through, sort of in your mind, in the months and perhaps even a year or so after the accident? Was there the physical aspect of what happened to you, was there a mental side as well that you had to overcome?
Well, it's a little ironic. I mean, it's obviously a physical disability, but it quickly becomes purely a mental challenge to figure out how to move on and to start to figure out how to find enough positive things in your life that sort of make it worth living. And early on, that's the big question, you know, how what quality of life could I live? What quality of life could anybody that suffers an injury like this live? And you just can't imagine that things, you know things will get a little bit better, but how much better, you know? And how does it affect the people around you? There's that feeling of sort of being a burden, and sort of not only was my life disrupted significantly, but it really does disrupt the people around you. But slowly, you learn that there's more that you can do, and I can't play hockey, but boy, I get kind of excited about going out to a nice restaurant and trying some new food. And it took me a while to figure out those little things that did put a smile on my face. And in time, you figure those out, and then you try to incorporate them into your life in a more regular basis. And life just takes in a new new direction. I'm not going to say I'm as happy as I was before my injury. That wouldn't be honest. But I can say I'm far happier than I ever thought I'd be. And it feels good to have come that far.
We're speaking with Travis Roy from the Travis Roy Foundation. If you wish to join our conversation, the number is 802-244-1777 or toll-free at 877-291-8255. Travis, why did you decide to start the Travis Roy Foundation?
I spent 6 months in the hospital after my injury. I had a lot of different complications. Four of those months were in Boston at Boston Medical, and early on there was just an incredible level of support, and between flowers coming into my hospital room and fruit baskets, and it got to a point where and how much fruit can you eat and how many flowers can you put in your room. I will tell you, it warmed my heart every time I saw it. But at some point, my family, they said, why don't we start to disperse these throughout the hospital a little bit, and they would go to other rooms and to bring in a fruit basket or some flowers or some teddy bears that would get sent. There were a lot of neat things, and there were a lot of people in that hospital that didn't have the support near that I had, and then I started going down to the rehab floor and seeing I'm meeting other families that were dealing with a loved one that was paralyzed, and then they couldn't afford the ramp to get their loved one back into the house, or the insurance wasn't going to cover the medical bed to get them home, and I just started to see the hardships, and then it also became clear that my insurance was pretty good, and there was some money raised after my injuries, and I wasn't facing the challenges that so many other families were facing, and so my family and I kind of took that same kind of idea of using the attention that my story received to try to help others. And so the foundation's been around for 19 years, I guess, now, and we've raised a lot of money through a number of different events. And so not only do we provide adaptive moving grants for the wheelchair, for the bed or the ramp to get back into the house, but we also fund research, and that's sort of the a little bit of the selfish part of the foundation for me is to know that we're doing something to bring about a cure and hopefully someday end paralysis. We're a ways off. Don't get me wrong, but you got to do something to help make that dream come true.
Travis, I'm just curious. Has there been much progress on spinal cord injuries?
It's been slow. It's been disappointing. Again, I've been paralyzed for, it'll be 21 years in October. And I never in my life did I think I'd still be in a wheelchair. I thought for sure in 10, 15 years that there'd be some breakthroughs and I'd be a little bit more independent. I might be a little ugly looking walking down the street. It wasn't going to be anything natural or perfect, but I assume something would have happened by now. But as slow as things have been, I will say in the last few years, and looking ahead in the next 3 or 4 years, I saw a lot of mice walk. I saw a lot of mice make some advancements, and finally, we're seeing things move into clinical trials. And it's not necessarily walking, but it's a little bit more hand movement, a little bit better control of bowel and bladder. Some of the things that people don't think about, but we are. It's going to be an interesting 10, 15 years ahead of us, because I do think there are therapies in the labs that will move through clinical trials that will absolutely change the face of paralysis as we know it, and certainly in the next 20 years, and quite possibly in the next 10.
We're speaking with Travis Roy from the Travis Roy Foundation. If you wish to join the conversation, the number is 802-244-1777 or toll-free at 877-291-8255. You wrote a book, 11 Seconds, A Story of Tragedy, Courage, and Triumph. Why did you decide to write the book?
I'll be honest with you. It was a matter of opportunity initially. I had some publishers that came to me, and I was still in the hospital, and they said, "You know, we don't there seems to be something a little different about your story. A lot of people are interested in, and they said, you know, would you be considered doing it? And I thought, I sounds kind of fun. So that's something I never dreamed of doing. And I got a nice ghostwriter, that E.M. Swift, who was a senior writer at Sports Illustrated, and two of us spent the fall of my freshman year after my injury back at BU working on it. And it was I didn't know, I'm going to be honest, I didn't know if it was going to be something I was going to regret for the rest of my life, or if it was going to be something that turned out to be positive and something I'd be proud of. And fortunately, it was just that. I'm amazed that the book's been out for 20 years now almost, and it so gets used in a lot of school reading programs. It's been a really, really neat thing, and as I say, it still sells to this day. And it's interesting when I'm in a rink or around Boston, or even in the Vermont area, you know, but there'll be some 10, 12-year-old boy who will recognize me, and I think, how the heck does he know who I am? But it's because of that book, and as I say, that in the classrooms being used around New England.
What was the message you hoped that people would get from the book?
Initially, I wasn't sure. When I was writing it, I was really just kind of telling a little about my story. But there were two things. One was I've always been. I was listening to you talking about politics earlier on, and one of the things that I feel like that's missing in a lot of our candidates these days is just strong, core, honest values. And I grew up in Maine and I spent my summers here in Vermont, and you know, when you said something, you followed through on it. The hard work, the pride, the love that I felt after my injury, and from the support that I have around me. And so I talk a lot about some values. I talk about a speech that I gave my senior in high school, and about those values. And then I guess the other piece is just the strength of my family, of my friends, and humanity in general. It's when you watch the news, when you see the articles, it's just a lot of negative energy, a lot of tragedy, a lot of sadness. But really, if people got to be in my shoes every day, I see the best in humanity. Initially, it benefited me, and for the last number of years, it's benefited the foundation as we try to help others, and it's incredible the generosity of our society, and the caring and the volunteering that really does go on every day, and unfortunately it just doesn't make for as good a headlines as the tragedies, but it happens, and it's I'm blessed to be a part of it.
ESPN did a video feature on you through one of their segments. It's called ESPN E60. And that generated a lot of interest, including nominated for an Emmy Award.
That was kind of cool. Not only an Emmy, but it's in the news category. So it's going up against 60 Minutes and Dateline, and it's not in the sports category. So that was an honor. But I will say it goes back to the story, and a big emphasis, a big part of that. And I know you're going to move in that direction. But they did a lot of filming up at the wiffle ball tournament that we do right in Essex Junction, Vermont. And when I talk about that humanity and the love and the generosity, that's what happens every summer in Essex at our annual Travis Wright Foundation wiffle ball tournament. So it was neat for ESPN to come up and cover my story 20 years later, but also to incorporate so much of that tournament and the good that comes of it, and that we're doing with the foundation.
And you've provided me a great segue right after this break. What I'll do, Travis, is turn to the wiffle ball contest.
Fantastic.
We're speaking with Travis Roy from the Travis Roy Foundation. And just if you do want to give us a call and have a comment or an opinion, give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. Or if you want more information about the wiffle ball contest, just hold on. We're going to get to that. This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. We're speaking with Travis Roy. Travis Roy from the Travis Roy Foundation. Travis, let's turn to the wiffle ball contest.
Yes.
First of all, let me ask this question. Why wiffle ball?
Why wiffle ball? Well, like so many things that that have kind of happened in my life and since my injury, there's just so many things that have just fallen in my lap and fallen in the lap of the foundation. And this is a there's no greater example than this tournament. Pat O'Connor, going back to my book, he had a couple sons, daughter that played youth hockey in Essex Junction, and he happened to read my book when it first came out, and there was a little footnote in the back of the book talked about the foundation if people wanted to support or get involved, and some contact information, and that's exactly how it happened. He read the book, he saw the contact, he called us and asked, he said, I built this little replica Fenway Park in my backyard, and I thought maybe we could do a little wiffle ball tournament to raise some money for the foundation. And that first year, it poured cats and dogs, and we had seven teams, and there was, I think we raised about $3,500, although it was a miserable rainy day, we had a blast, and we thought, oh, this is fun. We can do. We'll do this again. And the next year, I think we had 10 teams and raised a little bit more money. And we've just been doing that for the last 15 years, adding fields, adding teams, adding donors, and raising a lot of money. But it's a special place. So that's how that came to be.
You raised last year over $500,000. Did you ever think it would be this successful?
I've been a part of a lot of neat things. I've met celebrities. This is one of the most special things that I have ever seen in my life. And not only is it special, but for it to maintain the magic, the energy, the spirit. All of those, the pieces that make it special for 15 years now. It's magical. I lose, it's indescribable in some ways, but boy, we raise a lot of money and people, and the way we're able to do that though, which is most satisfying to me, is people get it. We'll have almost 400 players from across the country, primarily in the Northeast. There's some that fly in from England and come down from Canada. But they realize that it's a fun place and to get together with their friends. But they realize that we're trying to make a difference in the lives of people with spinal cord injuries. And they go out and they knock on doors and they send out their emails and they come up with some fun, unique fundraisers and they post on their Facebook pages and people respond, and it's just incredible to be a part of it.
Of course, we're talking with Travis Roy from the Travis Roy Foundation. We're talking about the Travis Roy Foundation Wiffle Ball Tournament. August 12th through the 14th, that's this weekend, in Essex Junction at what is called Little Fenway. How do people contribute, Travis?
So they can do it in many different ways. We've got an opening ceremony at 5:30 on Friday night. We usually do a little local celebrity and sponsor game with our sponsor representatives, and also celebrities and local media people, and Taylor Coppenrath, and you never know who's going to show up there. We've had Ben and Jerry there, and we've had it's a neat thing. So that's Friday night. We got all kinds of great food. It's almost a mix of a going to the fair and going to a baseball game, because we got great food, a lot of different vendors, and it runs all weekend, Friday through Sunday. Late afternoon, the playoffs will wrap up, and we got a neat ceremony at 2:30 on Saturday. We got a neat guest this year, Christopher Reeve's son, will be participating in the event. He works for ESPN, and ESPN had such a great time filming that episode last summer that they asked if they could bring a group up and participate. So, Will's at ESPN, and he's a Middlebury grad, and of course, the great work that his father initiated with the Christopher Reeve Foundation. So he'll be there to talk for during the ceremony at 2:30 on Saturday, and it's free. So if people want to come out, that'd be fantastic. And they can also go to the TravisRoyFoundation.org website and make a donation that way, or to the Travis Roy Foundation Wiffle Ball Tournament Facebook page. There's lots of great social media, but again, it's free, great entertainment, good food. Come on out and take in a bit of Americana and the best of humanity.
How many teams this year, do you know?
So we've got 32 teams. We've added four new teams. It's kind of fun. We got a team from New Jersey. It's a group of parole officers from the state police, and then I've incorporated every aspect of my life, but we didn't have the BU connection, so we've got a Boston University kind of hockey alumni team that'll be coming up. I'm trying to think what the other two teams are that are near this year. I'm drawing a blank, but with the ESPN piece, there's again a lot of publicity and attention put on it, and so we had to keep growing. We've got the three fields. Not only do we have Little Fenway, we've got Little Wrigley, the replica, and then we've got the little Field of Dreams. Just this weekend, they transplanted, like they do, about 500 stalks of corn, and they set up the outfield so that you get the corn in the outfield, and it's all coming together, which is hopefully the weather holds up. I think we're a little possible thunderstorm here or there, but I think it's going to be a beautiful weekend.
What is your hope for the future with those with spinal cord injuries?
My true hope is that that we end paralysis, that it's no different than ending polio. It is a horrible, devastating condition, and it's not easy living with it. And there are so many people in this country and around the world that are dealing with it, and it's. All the brainy, smart people, the researchers, there's no doubt that it can be done. It's just a matter of time. It's a matter of money. But I hope certainly in my lifetime that we will see the breakthroughs. I'm a little concerned. I don't know so much that I will benefit from it as much as when you're paralyzed 20 years. It's a long time to spend in a wheelchair, and the muscles atrophy, the bones atrophy, But I haven't given up by any means. But I, more than anything, I think of I have three nieces. I've got a nephew, 8 to 16 years old, and I would love for hopefully it's their generation that paralysis is a thing of the past, and it's very possible, and I'm excited to play our small little role in it, and hopefully it does. We can end it.
Travis Roy, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Mike, and thank you to everybody in Vermont that supported us. We've got great volunteers and our committee that help put this event together, and just so grateful to everybody that's a part of it, and just want to thank them.
Travis, thank you very much for your time today.
Great. Bye-bye.
That's Travis Roy from the Travis Roy Foundation. What an inspirational story. What an inspirational event that the Travis Roy Foundation Wiffle Ball Tournament in Essex this weekend, August 12th through the 14th. Get involved. Contribute if you've got the time and the inclination. When we come back, we'll continue our talk about the primary. Who are you voting for and why? That will be after we check in with our friends at Talk Media News. Are there particular things that you are interested in? in this primary season. This is Open Mic, and you are listening to locally owned and operated WDEV News Radio on the Friendly Pioneer, celebrating its 85th year anniversary this year. Celebrating the future, not the past. 85 years, WDEV News Radio. WDEV AM 550, broadcasting from Waterbury and Montpelier, 96.1 FM from Warren, 96.5 FM from Barrie, and serving the kingdom at 101.9 FM from Island Pond. Of course, we're streaming worldwide at WDEVradio.com. I'm Mike Smith. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. We'll turn our attention to national political issues now with our friend Bob Ney from Talk Media News. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning. You got the tunes going. That's good.
I've had the tunes going since 9 o'clock this morning. Hey, Trump's economic speech, it looks like he's trying to pivot. But Peggy Noonan in the Wall Street Journal is wondering if there is anything to pivot to. Is Donald Trump a one-act tragedy? I'm paraphrasing her column in the Wall Street Journal. But is this going to work, this pivoting to the economy?
We talked on your show this past week how he, and this was the prediction we were talking about, how he would go home in the weekend, somebody would sit down with him. I think that happened. I think it's a very selective, probably personal group. Otherwise, it would have leaked out by now. And he's attempted this pivot, his economic plan up in Detroit. Now, the thing is, Trump hemorrhaged so badly, and all of a sudden he comes back and pivots a little bit, and the polls narrow. This is because there are two weak candidates here. Hillary Clinton yesterday, after following his economic plan with hers, which is a kind of standard traditional Republican plan. Hers is kind of standard Democratic plan. But then she said, well, his was written by Wall Street. Well, who's kidding who? I mean, both plans, at the end of the day, do not address the budget deficit. They don't do it. They do this congressional 10-year speculation that in 10 years we're going to get X amount of money in. That's like you and I trying to say, well, we're going to up our expenditures and our personal budgets because in 6 years we're going to get more money. Mm-hmm. And that's what these plans fall short. So I'm not so sure it's all Donald Trump right now of imploding completely. I think there's still time yet for Hillary Clinton to do a little bit of her own. You've got two I bet you about 20% of the country today is not decided what they would do with either one of them.
You know what's interesting is that if you look at Donald Trump's plan, it has the tax cuts that we expect from Republicans, but it also, it's not a free trade plan, which must upset the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, must upset the Wall Street Journal, because they do harp on the fact that he is not a free trader.
Well, yes, and they're banking on the fact that if Hillary Clinton is elected, and a lot of Bernie Sanders supporters, I talked to about 200 of them at the convention, think that she will never hold up to what she's saying, and she will be a free trader. She'll find a way to a New Deal, quote. And I think that the business community, when it comes to free trade, looks at Trump and Clinton and thinks, okay, Clinton, she'll do something different. She'll do free trade. Trump, you'd have to edge him on. He'd mess the agreements up. So those who want the free trade are going to be more inclined. The Wall Street Journal, the foundation groups, the Chamber of Commerce, and of course, the thing is that Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House, he kind of believes that all Republicans are free traders, and that's not true. First of all, conservative Republicans don't like the sovereignty issue where a foreign country actually kind of takes over our laws, which they can do under a trade agreement. And the second thing is not all Republicans feel that that they benefit off of free trade. So you take some of the labor people and you combine them with the conservatives, you have a vast amount of people that are not necessarily sold on this whole free trade deal like Wall Street Journal and Speaker Ryan and some other people are.
Bob, is it too late to pivot? I mean, we have Susan Collins, among others, that prominent politicians that have come out against Donald Trump. And we have I've never seen this before. We have 50 Republicans that have signed a letter that basically say they don't trust Donald Trump on national security. Is it too late to pivot?
Well, Trump doesn't lose completely on that because, if I were Trump, I would say of those people, a vast majority are George Bush's people who destabilized the entire world through the Mideast fiasco. That's what I would say. And so he can erase some of that. Plus, Chertoff was head of that in that 50 group, and he's no outstanding person in a lot of people's minds, with Tom Ridge, former head of Homeland Security. Now, don't get me wrong. If you're a candidate, you want these people supporting you. But the fact that they're not is not the complete end of the world. But Trump did so much damage in the last 2 weeks. If he can pivot, and it's helping, but he better stay on course. And then with a couple errors by Hillary Clinton, it can tighten things up. If he has one of those surges again, Mike, you know, where he goes off target for 7 days, I don't know how he can come back.
Yeah, in a statement, Trump said the letter writers share the blame for making the world such a dangerous place. They are nothing more than failed Washington elite looking to hold on to power, and it's time they are held accountable for their actions. Trump said the former officials, along with Clinton, took part in the decisions that led to the invasion of Iraq, the death of Americans in Benghazi, Libya, and the rise of the Islamic State. He didn't seem to go after them individually as he usually does.
No, and I would have went after Chertoff because he was combined with a woman named Alice Fisher, and they covered everything up. They did. They covered up the torture. Now, I voted like Hillary Clinton did to allow full force for Iraq. Now, the difference is some of the people that voted for that say, well, you know, hey, Saddam was a bad guy. Yes, we were lied to, but yeah, Saddam was a bad guy. Well, I think the premier of China is a bad guy. I don't see us invading Beijing, you know. So, I mean, it was a mistake. And it was a horrible one, and we were lied to, and nobody ever went back to correct it. I have always argued those people that stood before us in the secluded skiff rooms where you can't get any inner, you know, any messages in or out of security, they ought to be brought back and asked, did they lie? Where did they get their information from? It's like they never existed. So I think Trump is a little on point because people in America are suspicious of why did we go to war. You know, what did we do it for? They're very suspicious.
Hillary Clinton seems that she can't get out of her way on these email things, on these emails. And she stepped right in it again in a Fox News interview where she basically said, you know, she basically said that the FBI agreed with her that she told the truth and everything was okay. And that's not what the FBI said. So why can't she just say, look, I made a mistake and I apologize, and then move on instead of wading into this thing again and again and again?
She does. It's endless where she says, well, hey, the director support me. Well, if you listen to that director's thing, he said everything except I didn't indict her. I mean, it was horrible. And by the way, I honestly don't think he should have been commenting on the case, to be frank about this. If you don't find somebody with enough evidence to take them to a grand jury and indict them, you're not supposed to talk about the case, no matter who they are. But he obviously, you know, did not do her any favors. But she's not doing herself favors by continuing this. And I also think with WikiLeaks, I don't think this is the end of all of this. So this email stuff, she's going to have to answer again, and she better get it down real pat to either say, you know, I made a mistake, or I'm done with this conversation, something, instead of keep them saying, well, you know, the FBI agreed with me. Well, no, they didn't. They really didn't.
And rumors keep swirling around about Hillary Clinton's health. Is it just Republicans planting this rumor, or is there something there?
I must say that everything I have heard about it, and I'm just being very candid with you, has come from inside Democratic friends of mine. Everything. In the sense that, you know, is something wrong? There's some pictures of her being helped up steps, things like that. That's where I've heard it from. Now, I'm not saying the Republicans won't foster the thing, you know. But it's all because, when she fell down and had the head injury, it just all started from there. I mean, I don't think there's much there, but, you know, that's just been around a long, long time.
In the wall, I'm gonna try to get you into a controversy here. So
if you want to.
But Brett Stevens of a columnist for the Wall Street Journal, really takes Sean Hannity to task for being Trump's cheerleader. Mm-hmm. The habit, and it was over this aspect of the the political system is rigged, and if Trump loses, it's because the political system is rigged. And his money line here is the habit of shifting blame and refusing to take responsibility is supposed to be the curse of the underclass and its political hucksters. But Mr. Hannity is giving Al Sharpton a run for his money. Is he right?
Well, Ellen Ratner and I are interesting. You know, I'm a Republican. She's a Democrat, right?
Mm-hmm.
I really don't like Hannity. She does. I think Hannity has not gotten to the Glenn Beck level, you know, but he's went so far sort of theatrically on some things, like overreaching, okay? Mm-hmm. I think he has. And I think this is an overreach. We have an election system that makes it, you know, harder to cheat and easier to vote in the generic aspect, and you can't sit there and computer rig multiple states. So this whole rigged thing, now it happened in the primaries in a sense to Bernie Sanders because it wasn't rigged electronically, but it was rigged system-wide, you know. But there's nothing that I can see where, you know, that there's going to be a rigged computer system. Mm-hmm. So I think that's stretching it.
Why do you think he said it, Bob? Do you think he said it because he thought he was going to lose and he wanted to give an excuse, or he wanted to motivate his base?
No, I think it's an excuse. Just as I hear Hillary Clinton really attacking Edward Snowden and WikiLeaks, right? I'm thinking in my mind, what is coming out that she's going to say, oh, I attacked them, that's why they came after me. I mean, that's in my mind with Hillary Clinton. Donald Trump's the same thing. He's kind of building it up that if he loses, you know, the Donald Trump lost because of a rigged system, not because of Donald Trump. I think they both kind of do separate ways of kind of building the case just in case.
And I'm trying to be controversial today, so let's continue. Who's our greatest threat? Is it ISIS or is it Russia?
ISIS. And the reason I say that, nobody wants to talk the truth on ISIS. We need to combine, and I'm not in office, so I guess I can say this, we need to combine with Russia, the Iranians, ignore Assad, and go after ISIS with the rest of the world and force the Saudis to, you know, either do that or sanction them, one of the two, because they created this mess. That's what we need to do. So the threat, the biggest threat, is ISIS. Now, if we go back to what we used to do in the Cold War and build underground military facilities and spend all this money, you know, we're kind of crazy. Now, that doesn't mean Putin's an easy guy to negotiate with, but we've got a juncture here. Are we going to go back to what we used to do with Russia and military crisis? And how much of the world can we take on? So I think, personally, ISIS is a larger threat. Russia's to be looked at and worried about. I think ISIS is the larger threat, personally.
Bob Ney, as always, it's great to have you on. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
That's Bob Ney from Talk Media News. When we come back, we'll return to the subject of primary day. Who are you voting for and why? And are some of the issues out there the reasons you're voting for a certain candidate? Give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 1-877-291-8255. Who's your candidate, and why are you voting for that candidate, and what are some of the issues that influenced you? This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. So in this segment, until the top of the hour, the end of the program, let's talk about the primary. Who are you voting for and why? And what are the issues that influences your vote? Is it the win debate? Has that influenced your vote of who you're going to vote for in the Democratic governor's race? Is it gun control? That's an important issue for many people. And if so, who will you vote for? And in the Democratic primary for lieutenant governor, just do endorsements matter? Because Bernie Sanders has endorsed David Zuckerman over rivals Keisha Ram and Shap Smith. And in the Republican race, have the negative ads against Phil Scott by Bruce Lisman influenced your vote? Give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. Or is it other issues. For example, I just saw this Facebook post this morning. It says, beware of government-run health care. May 1st, 2015, I retired to be a caregiver for my wife, who was ill at the time. I applied for coverage through Vermont Health Connect with the help of one of their navigators. With my income information, the woman at Vermont Health told us that what our premiums would be. When the bills arrived, it was over $100 per month more than what I told. My wife died in 2015, I immediately notified Vermont Health Connect to take her off the policy. My premiums remained unchanged for several more months. On June 7th, 2016, I got an $800 check from Vermont Health Connect for the overpayments. 2 weeks ago, I got a call from Vermont Health Connect demanding that I pay the $800 back because the check was sent in error. I called to complain. Vermont Health Connect returned my call to apologize, and they informed me that I did not have to pay the $800 back. Today, I got a call from Vermont Health Connect informing me that I supposedly do, in fact, owe $500 back, and that is now going to collections. This is the compassion and the competence of government-run health care. This is Vermont Health Connect. Beware before you sign up, please share. And this is similar to a story that we saw on the Channel 3 News where a woman had lost a child. And that child was for over a year, Vermont Health Connect kept warning her that if she did not assign the child a pediatrician, then her health care would be dropped. So it is it's interesting what's going on with Vermont Health Connect. One of the things that we're talking about today is the Vermont primary. It's Vermont Primary Day. And who are you going to vote for and why? Will the Wynn debate have an influence on how you vote in the Democratic governor's race? Is gun control an important issue for you? And in the Democratic primary for lieutenant governor, is Bernie's endorsement of David Zuckerman a factor for you? And in the Republican side, have the negative ads against Phil Scott by Bruce Lisman influence your vote? And by the way, do you think Vermont Health Connect or other issues like EB5 have made you worry of what is going on with state government? Let's go to Eric in Johnson. Eric, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Mike. Great show this morning. Really interesting about the wiffle ball.
It's a great tournament with Travis Roy, and yeah, he's a great guy, by the way.
Sounds it. I got a couple thoughts on the primary. I think that Scott will be our next governor. You know, I think the number one thing he's done is denounce Trump as the Republican presidential candidate, and I think that speaks volumes to his ability to be a straight shooter and call out bad characters. In Lisman's ads, he doesn't have a chance. I don't know why he's just spending all his money, but whatever. I thought Minter is overspent on the bridges in Vermont. I don't see how her overspending on all these bridges is an asset, a good thing for her, and she just lost the election. Also, going after the so-called responsible gun owners. I thought that Dunn's mailings were very misleading, saying that if you're voting for Bernie, vote for him. Bernie never endorsed him, and he's acting like that's the case. It was his campaign manager that...
Yeah, Jeff Weaver endorsed
him. Right. And then I went to the governor's debate in the Northeast Kingdom a month ago, and Galbraith definitely won that debate, even over Phil Scott. So I'm going to be voting in the Democratic primary to vote for Galbraith. He really did a great job there. And those were my thoughts on today's election.
Hey, Eric, thank you for your phone call. Let's go to Liz in Berlin. Liz, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Good morning. I wanted to say that I voted in the primary this morning. I voted for Phil Scott. Couple things I really like about Phil Scott. One, he's a decent, honorable person. And two, I appreciate that he said right off the bat he wouldn't support Donald Trump.
Well, thank you, Liz, for your phone call. We're talking about the primary today, and who are you voting for and why? Will different issues influence you? In, for example, in the Democratic governor's race, in the primary, in the Democratic side of the governor's race, is wind a big issue for you? And on both sides. I mean, is industrial wind, being pro-industrial wind, a big factor for you? Is keeping the ridge lines pristine a factor for you? Is gun control? We've heard a lot about gun control during this election, and is that an important issue for you? And if it is, how will you vote? We've had people on that really believe that we need gun control in terms of a ban on assault rifles and also a expanded sort of a verification check system that expands beyond what is going universal background checks. It's so-called universal background checks that go beyond having background checks if you buy through a gun dealer and sort of reaches out to private sales. In the Democratic primary on the lieutenant governor's race, do endorsements make a difference? We have Bernie Sanders endorsing David Zuckerman. Does that make a difference? And on the Republican side, the negative ads against Phil Scott by Bruce Lisman, does that influence your vote? And as we said at the top of the hour, when we came out talking about this in the beginning of the show, when we had so many phone calls, and we've had a lot of phone calls now, the big story of this primary season is the money that is being spent. If you're a candidate, just in the primary, you have to have about $1 million just to be competitive. I don't care what side of the aisle you're on, either you're a Republican or Democrat, you have to have about $1 million. Bruce Lisman has spent over $2 million. So the question is, who are you voting for today and why? Rob from North Carolina, I don't think you're voting today, but what do you say?
If I could have voted today, it'd been Phil Scott.
And why?
He's just a great guy. Years ago, I wrote for the Vermont Times, you know, that magazine way back when it kind of folded. And I was asked to interview Phil Scott, and I went up to Montpelier, you know, first person I really interviewed of any substantial position in government. And he just sat with me, and we talked a half hour. I asked him every question. He was polite. He gave great answers. There was no ill will in his heart. He talked about both sides, you know, the Democrat position and the conservative position. He had no ill will. It's just he's always wanted to have people sit down and talk and kind of work things out. And, you know, if he could just drown out the drumbeat of the special interests in the background and all that they say and everything they distort. Now, Phil Scott's a great guy, even though he's not going for Trump.
Thanks, Rob. Thank you for your phone call. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. We're talking about the primary. Who are you voting for and why? I'm giving you the opportunity. I'm opening up the phone lines. I'm giving you the opportunity to talk about your candidate or someone that you don't like as a candidate. This is your opportunity. Give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. If you've got an issue, if you've got a candidate, if you want to talk about the person you're supporting and why, this is your opportunity, because just as a heads up, we will be listening to the opinions and comments today of you. But tomorrow we're going to have political analysts on and talking about the results after tonight. So tomorrow will be jammed full of various people talking about the results. And on Thursday and Friday, we're going to be switching subjects away from politics. At least it won't be the mainstay of the program on Thursday and Friday. So this is your opportunity. If you want to talk about the primary, if you want to say who you're voting for and why, I'm giving you the opportunity. I'm opening up the phone lines for you to call in and tell us what you think about this primary season. 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. Let's go back to the phone line and Mike in Burlington. Mike, you're on open mic.
Yeah, I've got a question for you. Listening was talking about Phil Scott doing nothing for as long time as he's been in service. I mean, he's a lieutenant governor. If he wants to do more than the governor, then he should be the governor. He keeps on saying he hasn't done anything, but yeah, he's a lieutenant governor. They're supposed to be behind the curtain and let the governor do his job. And I think if he gets elected governor, he'll do a lot. That's what I have to say.
Thank you, Mike, for your comments. And that's what we're asking you, all of you today, is what is your opinion? What is your comment? I'm giving you the opportunity. I've opened up the phone lines. I've opened up the microphone to hear your voice. Who are you voting for and why? Is it gun control? Is it wind? Do you think we're going in the wrong direction? Is it the economy? What is it in this race that you are supporting or not supporting a candidate and why? Give us a call at 802-244-1777 or toll-free at 877-291-8255. Let's go to Bruce in Hardwick. Bruce, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Well, thank you very much. I voted for Listman, sending a message to Scott. You know, I want him to be a little tougher on some of the people around here, meaning Democrats.
And what, in that sort of analysis that you just said, you believe that Scott is going to win? Is that why you're sending a message to him?
Yes, and a number of my friends around here are doing the same thing. I hope the only horror show would be if Listman won. But, you know, another thing in this state, like I think a little while back on this program, I heard that Burlington, Vermont has like six senators.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what kind of representation is that when the rest of the state, I mean, geographically, you know, we're being cut loose out in the rural areas. And, you know, you see Leahy come in, where's he go? Burlington. Right back out of here. You know, same thing with the rest of them. And the rural areas, they're pretty well hurting. I know Burlington isn't, but we are. And, you know, we could use a little consideration. And the consideration being the taxes are outrageous in this state.
And that's your number one concern, Bruce, I think I'm hearing from you.
Yeah,
is that
it's just getting harder and harder to live here. I mean, we're becoming slaves to the state and the amount we pay. You know, one of my friends up in Standard, I mean, he pays around $8,000 Bernie Sanders' old house. And, you know, paying that kind of money is just, you know, it's ridiculous.
Hey,
it's tough.
Bruce, thank you for your call, and that's what we're doing today. We've opened up the phone lines for you to tell us who you're voting for and why, or who you're not voting for and the reasons why, and what are the issues that are influencing your decision to vote. One of the things that we've heard is the economy from Bruce. Other things that we've heard are gun control in terms of what we're doing in terms of gun control and who supports gun control and who doesn't. Is win a factor? Is our endorsements a factor? Do the negative campaigns work? And what about all this money that's coming into this campaign? Unbelievable amounts of money. If you've got a comment, you can tell us who you're voting for and why. The phone lines are yours at 802-244-1777 or toll-free at 877-291-8255. I'm going to open it up for the next 15 minutes or so, and you will have the opportunity to call in. If not, I'll move on to other things. I got plenty in this pile to move on to and talk about, but I want to give you the opportunity to call in. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. I've opened up the phone lines for you to tell us who you're voting for and why, or who you're not voting for and the reason why. We got about 9 minutes left. We'll take phone calls. Let's go to David in Burlington. David, you're on Open Mic. Good morning.
Good morning. Somebody told me yesterday why she was supporting Sue Minter, and I said, gee, that's really nice. But why has she made an issue of guns, which aren't really an issue in Vermont? Is she running for national office? So we had that conversation. A couple hours later, I ran into Sue Minter on the street. I said, Sue, how come you're making an issue out of guns? And she said, well, you know, we have a good bit of domestic violence in the state, and guns are a big factor in a lot of our domestic violence issues. And I thought, wow, when was the last time I actually learned something from somebody standing on the street with the yard sign? So I was pretty impressed.
It's Vermont after all, David.
It is Vermont after all.
Thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Mike in East Montpelier. Mike, you're on Open Mic. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. I think the races to watch are is the lieutenant governors. Anybody talked about that one yet?
No. Talk about it, Mike, to me.
Well, I got a sick feeling in my stomach about this Zuckerman, because I looked him up a little bit there, and he's out of state. He's a Massachusetts guy, and that's a Democrat. You know, you got what, Schaap or Keisha?
Wrong.
And then,
yep.
Yeah, well, Brock is Republican, but I mean, I'd be a little leery of anybody, you know, any more people out of state coming in here trying to fix it. He said he's a farmer. I'd have no idea. Nothing. I know nothing about this guy.
Let me ask you, Mike, let me ask you this. Jim Douglas was a Massachusetts guy. Governor Dean was a New York guy. Peter Shumlin is a Vermont-born politician. What difference does it make where they were born?
You put a spin on everything. That's a good one. I don't have an answer for you. I think I think that Schaap Smith, that probably if you're gonna be a Democrat, go with Schaap other than David Zuckerman, and I guess your only choice, Randy Brock for a Republican. You know, that's the way I feel.
Thanks, Mike. Let's go to Paul in Moncton. Paul, you're on Open Mic. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Mike. Let's see. In the primary, I am definitely a Scott supporter, but I voted for Listman only because I want to send a message to Phil Scott, because I believe he's going to win the primary. But the message being that when you get there, I don't expect you to start moving back towards the middle in order to get elected. I want you to, you know, stay true to the beliefs and or go down to Montpelier and fix the problems that have occurred over the last 30 years. With that said, the one candidate you would never hear me vote for is Schaap Smith. I've had run-ins with him, and even his campaign manager, Claire Ayer, up here in Addison County. Both those people are about as arrogant as the day is long. I've never met a group of people who just detested anybody who disagreed with them and would shut down communications just because I didn't agree with them. It's beyond anything I've ever experienced. And, you know, I'm a lifelong Vermonter, and it's not the way I think things should be done in Vermont.
Thanks, Paul, for your phone call. I think you may find it a little bit closer in that primary, in the Republican primary, than you think. Let's go to Betty in Barrie. Betty, you're on Open Mic. Good morning.
Good morning. I just got finished voting myself. I ain't going to say who I voted for. However, I did notice a couple of polling booths, and I had previously been up to Barrie Town walking my dog, and I voted in Barrie City. And I noticed there's Zuckerman signs all over the place, which I didn't vote for anyways, but I never saw one sign for Schaap Smith, not one.
Huh, that's interesting.
It is interesting, and I noticed that right off, and Zuckerman signs were all over the place.
Yeah, that is interesting, Betty. Betty, thank you for your calling in and telling us what you observed. We're coming down to about 4 minutes left. Tom, I think we'll hold it there, I think, for phone calls. I just don't want to make I don't want to get in the middle of phone calls and not being able to talk about that. We basically have We opened up the phone lines today to get your views on who you're voting for and why, and we opened up and gave you the opportunity. Thank you all for calling in. I do want to take just a few minutes. There's some other issues going on in the state that I just wanted to take a few minutes to discuss, and one of them is the Rutland Herald and Times Argus and what is going on there. You know, there it is a changing market in the newspaper world, and I was impressed with Rob Mitchell. He is the son of the owner, John Mitchell. He is the editor of the paper, and I don't know Rob Mitchell personally. I mean, I've met him. I've emailed him. He's been on. I met him once, maybe. And he's been on this program. But you don't. Few people understand the stress that you come under when you have an organization that's under stress and you are in charge of that organization. It is enormous, the stress that you're under. And you don't want to make a mistake. And you want to make sure there's competing interests here, and you want to make sure that you are doing the right thing. And I thought yesterday he did a very nice job being compassionate, being thoughtful, and did it with dignity. Now, he's gotten rapped because he couldn't say everything that everybody wanted in terms of answering questions. But you're really caught in a bind there because you want to get things out. But in these situations, things are so fluid, you don't want to get it wrong. And that's the difficulty that you're in. And my only hope, and I got to preface this. I mean, I do write for the Rutland Herald and Times Argus, but they are a newspaper with rich history and a very rich journalistic ethic. And my hope is that they do find a way to do this. But what I was impressed with is the way that Rob Mitchell yesterday handled the situation. And they could have hit it on and not written a front page story today, but they did. They wrote a front page story. And I don't know how old Rob Mitchell is, but boy, what he did yesterday was beyond his years, because that takes years to do. And I've been in organizations. I've been in charge of organizations that have been under stress. I've been asked to come in and take charge of organizations that are under stress. And what Rob Mitchell did yesterday was something that we should look at, I think, in terms of the future. I want to thank you all for your phone calls today. We had a bunch of phone calls. Some I didn't get to, and I apologize for that. I want to thank our guest, Travis Roy, from the Travis Roy Foundation. What a great guy he is. And reminder that there's the Wiffle Ball tournament this weekend in Essex, Vermont. Tomorrow, Eric Davis, Steve Terry on the primary results. This is Open Mic, and you are listening to locally owned and operated WDEV News Radio on the Friendly Pioneer, celebrating its 85th year anniversary this year. WDEV AM 550, broadcasting from Waterbury and Montpelier, 96.1 FM from Warren, 96.5 FM for Barrie, and serving the kingdom at 101.9 FM from Island Pond. Of course, we're streaming worldwide at WDEVradio.com. I'm Mike Smith. Thank you all for your phone calls.
The Open Mic podcast is brought to you by Hickok Boardman, Dennis Ricker, and Brown.
Find us online at hbinsurance.com. And you're always welcome to visit us on Facebook. In Vermont, online, on the phone. Hickok and Boardman Insurance Group. We are here when you need us.